The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I wonder if you would recommend locking down schools if you had to do it all over again.
Well, you know, again, it's first of all, I didn't recommend locking anything down. You're asking me questions. You're talking about the CDC is the public health agency that uses their epidemiologists and their science-based approach to make recommendations.
It was a decision to make a recommendation to the president. And when it became clear that when we had community spread, I recommended to the president that we shut the country down.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The hashtag of the afternoon is flip-flop. That's Dr. Anthony Fauci, who was at the White House today talking about the future of the COVID-19 pandemic. Wait a minute, didn't we just live through? Anyway, we'll connect those dots a little bit later on. John Harper in for Drew again this afternoon on this feast day of Saints Joachim and Anne, the maternal grandparents of Jesus. So how did your grandparents help you become the Roman Catholic woman or man you are today? We're going to share those stories coming up. And also in a few minutes, the young men who could be your next parish priest are in formation right now at the Pontifical North American College in Rome. Meet the new rector of what is referred to as the NAC North American College and learn more about the faith of these incredible young men who will guide our church through the next generation. That's all coming up here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. We begin again in Canada, where Pope Francis has just concluded celebrating the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass for some 65,000 pilgrims in Edmonton, Alberta. The Holy Father continues what is called the Pilgrimage of Penance, and it's called that because Pope Francis came to Canada. He'll be there through the week to apologize for the role the Catholic Church played in physical and mental abuse in residential schools for Indigenous children. Evelyn Corkmaz is one of those survivors of abuse who attended St. Anne Residential School from 1967 to 1972. She was in the congregation today.
I'm glad he did apologize. There was a big it was emotional because I have family, friends, and community members that went to residential school that didn't have the opportunity to hear this apology. And so that part of it was emotional for me. And like I said earlier, you know, it took 50 years for me to hear this apology yesterday. So that was very, a big step in my life. You know, it took me 50 years to hear him say, "I'm sorry."
The mood in Edmonton today was decidedly upbeat. The Holy Father arrived to celebrate Mass Commonwealth Stadium in his Pope Mobile. And if you have seen any of the video, and it just concluded, you'll probably see it on television tonight. It really is reminiscent of the Holy Father's weekly audiences in St. Peter's Square, because he entered in the Pope Mobile, and you know he's got bad knees, but he was standing up. And a number of the faithful were able to bring their children up to the Pope Mobile for a blessing and a kiss. And you know how much the Holy Father loves to interact with the faithful. You've seen it so many times. In fact, in our conversations when I was doing Morning Air with Ashley Narona, who will be on the air tomorrow morning, by the way, on Morning Air, we would always talk about how the Pope waded into the crowd. And that's what he did in Edmonton today. It was really reminiscent of those audiences at St. Peter's Square. Roanne Cassino and her husband made the pilgrimage from Los Angeles to Edmonton to see the Holy Father.
I was praying that we can get tickets, and then my sister-in-law was able to get us tickets. So I prayed for it to be here, and now I'm here with my husband. It means so much to us because we're very
Catholics.
We're devoted Catholics, you know, and it will mean we can't go to Rome, so we're here. It's closer to, you know, for us to see the Pope.
Samantha was also one of those pilgrims who traveled to Edmonton to see the Pope. She focused on his message of forgiveness.
The whole reason why it's so important is because of the reconciliation aspect of it. As young Catholic kids, we were taught to forgive and to ask for forgiveness, especially. And I think the whole reconciliation part of it is what really brought me to here and how the Pope is actually taking initiative in doing that. For me, it's kind of hard to ask for forgiveness, and seeing actually the leader of the Catholic Church and such a big religious leader willingly doing it himself, coming to Edmonton especially, coming to Canada, I think it's really cool and definitely something to think about.
You can hear the mood there in Edmonton, Alberta, as the Holy Father celebrated the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass, and that just wrapped up, in fact, about 90 minutes ago during his homily. The Holy Father focused on the importance of grandparents as an integral part in our faith legacy, this on the feast day of Saints Joachim and Anne, the maternal grandparents of Jesus.
Es la fiesta de los abuelos de Jesús.
The grandparents of Jesus. The Lord has gathered all of us together precisely on this occasion, so dear to you and to me. It was in the home of Joachim and Anne that the child Jesus came to know his older relatives and experienced the closeness, tender love, and wisdom of his grandparents. It was in our grandparents' homes that many of us breathed in the fragrance of the gospel, the strength of a faith which makes us feel at home. Thanks to them, we discovered that kind of familiar faith. Because that is how faith is fundamentally passed on, at home, through affection and encouragement, care and closeness.
Pope Francis is going to be in Canada for the week. He's crisscrossing the country. After Edmonton today, he'll head east and meet with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his cabinet before heading west. He'll eventually go back to the Vatican, and that's coming up on Friday. A couple of other stories we're following. Of course, your money prices are up for food and gas. Confidence is down in our economy.
The Conference Board reports that its Consumer Confidence Index fell to 95.7 in July, down from 98.4 in June. The board blames the fall on consumer anxiety, especially over inflation at a 40-year high. The Federal Reserve is expected to raise its benchmark borrowing rate again on Wednesday, possibly by another 0.75 point as a corrective measure on inflation.
That's ABC's Derek Dennis, and we could be facing a recession depending on how much you and I pull back in our spending. And weather is also making news for those of you listening on Relevant Radio 95.1 in St. Louis. Did you get to work this morning? Flooding rains overnight and through the morning drive, as much as 11 inches of rain in a short amount of time, an amazing amount of flash flooding all through Metro St. Louis. Dennis Jenkerson is the fire chief in St. Louis.
About 70 different rescues / assist of civilians in the area.
Everything's drying out now, but it was a real mess this morning. We're hopeful you didn't get caught in that. And out in California, crews in California are making some headway, battling the Oak Fire near Yosemite National Park. ABC's Alex Presha, wearing a protective air mask, is on the front lines.
Cal Fire has made some significant progress on this, now at 16% containment. Yesterday alone, they dropped 300,000 gallons of water on this fire, which definitely helped with that effort. People are anxious to get back home. The second part of this is they're coming back to not just charred remains, but also these toxins in the air that are very, very dangerous.
And continue prayers for those of you listening through Northern California and all up and down through the valley here on Relevant Radio as we try to get a handle on that Oak Fire. And they are making some progress, so that's some good news compared to yesterday as well. It's 11 after the hour. Coming up in this hour, more on the Pope's pilgrimage to Canada, what the Vatican calls that pilgrimage of penance. Later on, we pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet. And the latest on how Catholic hospitals may face federal penalties for simply maintaining Catholic values in their health care. That's all coming up today here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. But very right off the top here, let's take a look at the young men in formation right now who may someday be your next parish priest. The Pontifical North American College in Rome has prepared thousands of American seminarians to serve as priests here in the United States. And this year, they have a new rector who literally continues to unpack this afternoon. It was just 3 weeks ago that Monsignor Thomas Powers became the 24th rector of the North American College. I'm sure a year ago, maybe even just 6 months ago, he never expected to be in this assignment. Monsignor was a pastor, the pastor of St. John Parish in Darien, Connecticut, also serving as the Vicar General of the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut. And he joins us now live from Rome, where it's a little bit after 9 o'clock at night. Thanks for staying up late with us, Monsignor. Did you ever expect to be there? Have you unpacked yet?
I'm just first of all, John, thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you. Yes, I'm unpacked, settling in, and getting used to the new role. It's been a very exciting couple of weeks.
I can't imagine what that phone call was like because, again, you were very happily running a very successful parish and a very faith-filled parish and also serving as the Vicar General of the Diocese of Bridgeport. And then, bam, your life just gets turned upside down. We know that God is a God of surprises, but you're the poster person for that.
Well, he certainly is. And it's a phone call I never expected, never really sought out, certainly. And so when the phone call came, a lot of the bishop to discern, to pray, to think, talk to my mom and dad, who were 87, 85, and they've all been very supportive. And I've really never asked for a single assignment in my life as a priest, but I've been happy everywhere I've served. And I did not have a really strong reason to say no, and I didn't want to start saying no to the church yet. So I gave my biggest yes of my priesthood in saying yes to this job.
Indeed, and we continue to pray that the Holy Spirit guides you. Monsignor Thomas Powers, the new rector of the Pontifical North American College, joining us live from Rome here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And you have just accepted, and they've just arrived, the brand new class of freshmen. Tell us about the freshmen and how many young men are in formation or will start their formation at the NAC, as it's called.
Yeah, so the first-year theologians, they're called the new men, historically. So the new men arrived last week on Wednesday from the States, and of course they came. It was very hot here in Rome. It's hot places, but it was extremely hot when they arrived, and they came tired, jet-lagged, but when they walked in the college, the gates of the college, looked at this amazing building and met the people, they just were, their eyes were wide open. It was a great day, and they were here until Sunday, and they went off to 1 month of Italian language study, went to Assisi, some went to Verbania, and some to Siena. But so 29 are coming in the new class, and about 23 here this past week, and they really were impressive young men and really happy to be here, and I can't wait to start working with them and the other men at this house. So it was a great first start, and for me as a new rector, my first, they're new men, but I'm kind of a new man myself, although I've spent a lot of time in this building. I've lived probably 13 years here as first a seminarian and then again as an adjunct spiritual director when I worked over here in the Holy See. But this is my first time as director, serving, so it was really kind of a new experience for me as well.
Monsignor Powers, there are seminaries, of course, here in the United States, seminaries all around the world, but specifically for young men in formation in the United States, many seminaries to go to here. How does a young man get to the Pontifical North American College versus a seminary here in the States?
I think it's true for all the seminaries is Bishop, the ordinary of the diocese, assigns all of the seminarians to a particular seminary. And where some bishops send to particular seminaries and based on the region, we have about 55 dioceses represented here at American College. And so every man who comes here is sent as bishop to be here. So it's not a question of a guy decides he wants to come to Rome and wants to be at the college and he comes. He is sent here by his bishop for could be a number of reasons. Usually the guys who come, of course, are they're bright, as are other seminaries throughout the country, obviously. But these guys learn a second language and study. You've got to be mature enough to be able to come to a whole new country. And most of the men do not return home until after their second year. So they're getting used to a new system, a new city, a whole new seminary formation program. And they go 1 year, then they spend the summer often doing pastoral work somewhere in Italy or in Europe or even other world or do some more language studies, and they go for second year here, and then you can imagine the excitement to go home for the first after 2 years. They're really excited to do that. So it's a great experience over here, and it's a unique experience as well.
Understanding that these are new men, the 29 who arrived just a week ago, Monsignor Powers, and you're the new man, having just started as the rector of the North American College on July 1st. But so far, what impresses you about these young men, and how have they touched you as a faith-filled Roman Catholic man and priest?
These guys, again, the guys I just met last week, they're joyful, they're committed, they're serious about the faith. And I read all their autobiographies. They express their upbringing, their family, their hopes and dreams about being a priest, what they want to get out of priestly formation. And they're very transparent and very honest about how they want to serve. They want to be holy priests. They're honest and transparent about the struggles or weaknesses, and it's really inspiring. And so these guys just really struck me as men who want to be heroes. They want to have heroic virtue for Christ, for the, and are willing to give up everything for that. So that's what really impressed me this week, and I know the other guys in the house are the same, that they really want to give it all. They don't want to hold anything back. They want to be informed well, and which we will do here at the college.
You have just come from being a pastor at St. John Parish in Darien, Connecticut. You talk about the heroic virtue of these young men. How, and your advice to other pastors listening, and you can put yourself back into your old job, how do you communicate that to young people, especially those in the Sacrament of Confirmation, where you really have those formative years to really be heroic Catholics, to be a young man or a young woman with heroic virtue?
You know, that's a great question. I shared some of the confirmation duties with Bishop Caggiano, the Bishop of Bridgeport, and I really enjoyed the confirmations because you get to meet new people, and the young people are so excited about the sacrament. And always in the homily, as the bishop does, I would always mention, you know, leave your heart open to maybe the Lord's calling you to be a priest or for the women to enter religious life, consecrated life. So we can do that, but that's not enough. I think we have to really encourage families also to, encourage vocations, or if nothing else, just don't not encourage vocation. Make it part of the discussion, and we just need people to have open hearts, that they're willing to give it a try if they're called, and if they're not, that's fine, but just to be open and to let the Lord have some space when you can call you and the possibility. But it's important for pastors, and I think pastors do a great job of trying to form vocations in the parish, to preach vocations, to create a culture of vocations. I think St. John's, that culture was already there when I arrived. I think it's even there now, certainly, where the thought of being a priest was appealing. We had some young priest last summer with me, and we had a deacon all last year who's now a priest, and so and a seminary the summer before, and so the people got a sense of how one goes from seminary to deacon to priesthood, and these are great, wonderful guys, and the in love with them. And so I think that St. John's, again, is one example of many parishes where you create a culture of vocations where people are praying for it and also by their words and their prayers and their deeds.
Monsignor Powers, we hear the hope and the joy in your voice, not only as the newly arrived rector of the North American College, but also talking about these new men, the 29 new seminarians at the Pontifical North American College, in addition to those in formation. So there's hope and joy about vocations, not only there, but how do we, as the folks who are sitting in the pews, bring that message home to our kids and in our parish communities of hope and joy in a country, as you know, that has a little bit of a crisis when it comes to priestly vocations?
Yes, I know that, and I think luckily we have some priests that are just wonderful, and the priests bring joy themselves to a parish or to an assignment, and people get to interact with the priest, and they see the joy, and they see that this is a life that's very exciting, it's rewarding, it's fulfilling. The priests are happy. We know that from all the studies that priests are happy men, and sometimes people don't see that, maybe they don't understand that, but I think we just have to go to priests, talk to them, ask them questions, know them as your pastors, and hear about what it's to live the life of a priest. And it's again, it's an exciting life if you're called to it. And I think I can't give anything I would rather be in my life. When I was younger, of course, there were other things I thought I would be, but God had different things. And so right. Families to encourage young men to be open to that.
There's a tremendous legacy of the Pontifical North American College among the rectors, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who is the Archbishop of New York. And when Cardinal Dolan was at the North American College, he taught. Are you going to teach as well?
I will not be teaching. He taught an American history class and the church history, and it was wonderful. I took the class. It was an excellent class. He was a great teacher, as you can imagine. And he was my rector for years. So Cardinal O'Brien, my rector for year, and then Cardinal Dolan for the last 4 years here, and then both wonderful men and great rectors in their own rights. But I will not be teaching a course, probably better for the seminarians. Give some Cardinal, but he was, and I still have the notes from that class, actually.
Really?
Yes,
wow.
I do.
Wow, that's great. And that must have been fun having Cardinal Dolan as a rector, because we just know how charismatic he is, and also how powerful he is as a communicator with the very simplicity of the message of the gospel that just really hits the bullseye of your soul every time.
That's right. He would give wonderful rector's conferences that ended up becoming someone of a book. And he would use humor, human stories, real people, his own experiences. But in the end, it was also, while you might be laughing a little bit and having some fun with it, very serious message. And he was no-nonsense about the importance of priestly formation, the need to be priest, and that's why he was phenomenal as a rector. He really, as you said, excellent communicator, and was very clear about the importance of what we do here.
That's magnificent. Well, count on our prayers here among our Relevant Radio family as you begin the brand new assignment as the 24th rector of the Pontifical North American College. Monsignor Thomas Powers joining us live from Rome. Thanks for staying up to 9:30 at night to talk with us here on Relevant Radio. Monsignor, you'll be in our prayers. Thanks and God bless.
John, thank you so much. Thanks to everybody. I appreciate it.
Monsignor Thomas Powers joining us live from Rome today here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. And coming up a little bit later on, in fact, in just a few moments, we're going to go inside this remarkable pilgrimage that the Holy Father is doing in Canada. And it's a 5-day pilgrimage. Last night in his what he calls this pilgrimage of apology because of Indigenous people who went to schools that were run by Catholic nuns and priests, and they suffered a great deal of physical and emotional abuse. And this went on from the late 1800s all the way through 1975. So this pilgrimage of reconciliation is happening across Canada. And last night, the Holy Father really became a parish priest, going to one parish, there are about 300 people there, and just having this intimate conversation with them. Can you accept that forgiveness if you understood what's going on there? And perhaps as Catholics here in the United States, while we understand what happened during the abuse crisis, the depth of what happened with these Indigenous schools, especially in Alberta, is greater than I think anything that we saw in the abuse crisis as it kind of hit in 2002 and a couple of other times since. We'll go inside that with Ed Condon coming up, and of course the Divine Mercy Chaplet at the top of the hour as we continue here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Insight and analysis right here. It's the Drew Mariani Show. Relevant Radio.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Get informed and get connected. It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
John Harper in for Drew this afternoon. Let's go north of the border to Canada, where the Pope is there for an historic visit. Pope Francis is there all week long for what the Vatican calls a tour of peace. Francis is only the second Pope to visit Canada, and the Holy Father is there to give an historic apology for residential school abuses, which first came to light back in 1990. The Holy Father expressed sorrow, indignation, and shame for what happened. Some background, 200,000 Indigenous children were forced to attend Indian Day and residential schools in Canada to assimilate into Western cultures. Those schools were run by the Catholic Church from the late 1800s through 1975, and it was there that children suffered physical and sexual abuse at many of these schools. Here's how the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation is covering the story and how they're speaking with some of the victims.
Karen Chaboyer is Ojibwe from Rainy River First Nations, and she says she has a long way to go on her journey. Was sent to a Catholic residential school in Fort Francis, Ontario for 9 years.
I don't even think the Pope should be here right now. I think all those graves should be dug up, every single one in Canada, before he comes here. He has to look at the damage that was done. He has no clue of how many little ones are still missing. And we don't either.
So you, in your head, you can't even imagine that this has a good outcome, yeah. This visit.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even go there.
No. They did horrible stuff. They did. They had no love whatsoever. in their bodies, they taught about God, but they did not show it.
That's a little glimpse into the gravity of the situation and the gravity of the psyche of those who were affected by this abuse for some 75 years. Let's try to put this in perspective as the Holy Father continues a week-long journey in Canada. Ed Condon is joining us, the co-founder of The Pillar. You can find them online at pillarcatholic.com. And perhaps many of you have read Ed's work in secular titles like The Washington Post and The National Review, The Spectator, The Washington Examiner. And Ed is also a practicing Catholic lawyer. Ed, welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. It's good to have you on.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now, we lived through the abuse crisis here in the United States from the beginning of the 2000s all the way until very recently. Do you think the broader Catholic world understands the gravity of what happened to these children in Canada?
No, I don't think it does. I think it's very hard to understand from through the lens of the trauma that the Church of the United States has been through with the sexual abuse crisis, what exactly we're talking about when we're talking about the residential school system. You know, we've heard stories of horrific individual instances of, you know, what is the deliberate abuse of children, whether it's physical, sexual, emotional, or whatever. But the problem with the residential school system is there isn't really a good here that's being abused. The system was itself wrong from the beginning, that children were forcibly separated from their parents by government policy and sent to these schools with the intention of, quote unquote, civilizing them. Now, that isn't even a thinly veiled code. What they meant was, we are trying to stamp out these families. We're trying to stamp out their culture. We're trying to stamp out their identity as people. That was the starting point. And it's really hard to build anything positive on something that's so wrong from its very foundations.
And the bigger picture of that is, it's something that was condoned by the Catholic Church that goes back many, many, many years. And a number of those abuse victims are saying, we need the Holy Father to address that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there has been, watching the Pope's reception in Canada, I think it's fair to say it's been broadly positive, but by no means universally well received, that there is a lot of hurt there. There is a lot of wounds in the culture in Canada around the church, around the government, and the First Nations peoples. I mean, it's worth bearing in mind that the Catholic Church bears a sort of unique role in all of this because it administered some 70% of the residential schools that were built during this time period. But at the same time, it wasn't that the church came up with the idea. This was a government policy. These were government schools. And a lot of the horrible, you know, mortality rates that we saw amongst the children in these schools weren't necessarily a result of them being deliberately killed, but the entire school network was a creature of chronic underfunding and neglect. So hunger, disease, all of these things were rampant in what was supposed to be a home for children.
Well, what's interesting is that we have our conversation with Ed Condon, the co-founder of The Pillar, online at pillarcatholic.com, and putting the Pope's tour of penance across Canada in some perspective for you today. This morning, as the Holy Father celebrated Mass at Commonwealth Stadium for some 65,000 pilgrims in Edmonton, a number of those abuse victims were there. We saw a real jubilant atmosphere, and you might expect that with 65,000 and a papal visit celebrating Mass, but it was decidedly different than yesterday. And in watching the coverage from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, many of those they spoke to accepted the Pope's apology and really understood what forgiveness was. And that's also a bigger lesson for the rest of us to see how they've accepted forgiveness.
I think that's right. But I think the other thing that's been very important with how Pope Francis has struck a tone during this penitential pilgrimage is he's not just there to say sorry.
Right.
He's not just there to say something bad happened and I apologize for that. He's there to recognize that what the church participated in the residential school system was really an existential contradiction of the entire mission and message of the church. That the idea that these children were being quote unquote Christianized in these schools, that they could be taken from their parents forcefully, baptized with or without their consent, and told you are now Christian. That this isn't how the church envisages or speaks about evangelization. That inviting people to convert presupposes their human dignity and their free will. And that is what fundamentally was taken from these children and their families. And Pope Francis has been very, very strong in recognizing this. Not that there were individual cases of abuse, not that there were specific bad actors, but that the entire premise of what was done by the church in these schools was something it shouldn't have been involved with in the first place.
You know, what was interesting last night, Ed, is that the Holy Father went to Sacred Heart Indigenous Parish And there were some 300 people there, 300 people. It was a very intimate setting. There were cameras, but no sound. And you saw the Holy Father, and you could just read the body language of those 300 faithful that were there. The Holy Father became a parish priest, and at least to me, that was a very powerful witness. And those who were there who spoke to the press today really talked about how they brought their parents and their grandparents in their hearts who couldn't see this apology and wanted this apology. And they got that from the Holy Father. So it really was a tremendous pastoral moment, I think, not only for the Holy Father, certainly for those 300, but for the rest of us watching it.
I think that's right. And you say that Pope Francis became a parish priest in that moment. I think it's exactly right. You know, we tend to think of popes in different molds. You know, JP II was this great prophetic voice. Benedict XVI was this towering academic and theologian. I think the model of Pope Francis really has been, as you say, of a sort of parish priest for the universal church, that that's where he's most comfortable, that his best expression, the level at which he is able to express his own priesthood best is at the level of being a local pastor. And I think that's something that's really come to the fore during this visit.
Do you feel, Ed, that this trip is a conclusion or just the beginning of the discussion of forgiveness?
Oh, I don't think it's a conclusion at all. In fact, I think that's really what has made it so effective at times, and especially his apologies. He's not proposing to shut the door on what happened and turn the page, to mix my metaphors. What he's really proposing is a Christian ideal of reconciliation, which is this is not about moving past something. It is about bringing people back together. And I was very struck that what he did in one of his addresses to the First Nations communities yesterday was to talk about all suffering, and especially the suffering of the innocents, finding its true image in Christ, that this is what the church has, that it contradicted so badly in the residential school system, but also is the chance for true reconciliation, is the image of Christ on the cross.
As you mentioned reconciliation, and I was struck by this young woman, Samantha, who came to see the Holy Father today.
The whole reason why it's so important is because of the reconciliation aspect of it. As young Catholic kids, we were taught to forgive and to ask for forgiveness, especially. And I think the whole reconciliation part of it is what really brought me to here, and how the Pope is actually taking initiative in doing that. For me, it's kind of hard to ask for forgiveness, and seeing actually the leader of the Catholic Church and such a big religious leader willingly doing it himself, coming to Edmonton especially, coming to Canada, I think it's really cool and definitely something to think about.
Ed, that's a young woman named Samantha. She could not be more than 20 or 21 years old. And what strikes me is the resilience of her faith. What a tremendous witness for the rest of us.
Absolutely. But I think this is one of the great benefits that we see whenever one of these papal trips is undertaken, whether it's a penitential pilgrimage like this, which is something of an exception, or just in general, when the Pope goes on the road, as it were, is that the visible figure of Peter, of the Bishop of Rome, of the unifying head of the church, being present in different parts of the world, is always a moment of profound importance in the lives of young Catholics wherever they go. I think it's why the World Youth Days have been so important. And I think you can trace entire generations of priests, certainly in this country, who look back on past papal events like the World Youth Day in Denver in the 90s and things like that and say, this is a moment where I really encountered the church in a different way.
Does the Holy Father, and we don't know whether or not he'll make another pilgrimage here to the United States, but what does the Vatican have to do to address the abuse issues here in the United States, the apologies, if you will, as they're doing in Canada?
Well, I think the abuse crisis that we've had in the United States, which has really stretched across two decades now, at least in terms of its public reckoning, it obviously goes back much further than that, is as much a question for the U.S. hierarchy as it is for the universal church, that the U.S. sexual abuse crisis was very much a scandal that I think was made in America by and large. You look at the worst decades for instances of abuse, particularly in the 70s and early 1980s, that this is by and large a crisis that was manufactured by U.S. bishops who decided that they didn't need to follow the rules that the Vatican had set on how to deal with complaints of possible abuse, how to deal with priests they knew to be abusers. And I think there's a lot of credit that needs to be given to the USCCB for having responded in a very forthright way since the scandal first broke, that we have things like the Dallas Charter, we have things like the USCCB essential norms, and we have a measure of transparency now. You know, it was, I think, last week or the week before, the U.S. Bishops' Conference published its annual independent audit of abuse allegations made in the United States, in parishes and dioceses in the United States. And the numbers are falling again and again, year on year. And not just historical allegations are tailing off that people are coming forward, but contemporary ones are also falling. And I think this is progress that can be measured and can be said to be progress. I think the Vatican possibly has a different challenge ahead of it, which is how does it begin to learn the same lessons of transparency and frankness that the U.S. bishops have had to grapple with in the last two decades and apply those lessons to the universal church? Because I think a lot of the signs that we've seen coming out of the Vatican is there's a will to do some things, a lot of legal reforms, a lot of policy reforms, but there's still a reflexive posture of secrecy. And I think that's the thing that needs to change next.
Do you also feel that here in the United States, very often we want a one-size-fits-all kind of grand solution that's easily fit in a soundbite? But when we watch what is happening, at least over the last 24 hours up in Alberta, it really is the small victories that will be the legacy of the Holy Father's trip.
I think that's absolutely right. I don't think you can ever put, you can never underestimate the power of individual moments, of individual encounters. And I think that's why trips like this when the Pope is on in Canada are so important, is it gives the chance for this sort of spontaneous encounter, this moment that you can't plan or capture or repeat. And you just don't get that if you're sitting in the Vatican.
Right. Ed Condon is our guest today. He's the co-founder of The Pillar online at pillarcatholic.com. We're looking at the Holy Father's pilgrimage to Canada, what is being labeled as the Tour of Penance. Our number is 888-914-9149. Perhaps you have watched some of the coverage from Canada. You have seen, and it's getting some coverage here in the secular press. I saw it on ABC last night, on CBS. I'm not quite sure if NBC carried it as well. I can't speak to the cable news networks, but good for them for covering issues of the Catholic Church and also doing it in a factual way. That doesn't always happen, as you know, in the secular media when it comes to issues, especially issues as delicate as this. Our number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Also, Ed, as a follow-up to the last question, with 1.3 billion Catholics, but let's also just bring it back here to the United States, we each make our own journey of reconciliation, so this isn't going to be a one-size-fits all thing.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I've had the very daunting privilege of working with survivors of the sexual abuse crisis, both as a canon lawyer and as a journalist, and they all tell a very, very different story about where they've ended up and how they got there. And very often it turns on an individual encounter, that there was a person, whether it was a family member or a priest, or in some cases a lawyer or a journalist or whoever it may be, the first person who really heard them out. And that this was an incredible moment, a transformative moment for them, really. And I think this is a lesson of listening that the Church has been learning in the United States in the last two decades, but is still learning. And I think a lot of that, you can't plan it. You can't create a policy that changes people's hearts. And I think changing a culture is something that has been happening in the Church in the United States slowly, but necessarily slowly, because cultures do change slowly. But having a church that has a very receptive heart to these hard realities in what is our own Catholic family, I think is a kind of progress that you can't schedule, you can't write down necessarily on a sheet, but it's a learned and lived experience that grows with time. And I think we can all be encouraged that that does seem to be happening.
As many of the survivors who were at one of the ceremonies in the last 24 hours, Ed, said that they were carrying their parents and their grandparents in their hearts. Not lost on the Vatican is the timing of this trip, especially the Mass today on the feast day of the maternal grandparents of Jesus.
That's right. In fact, Pope Francis made something of a call for World Day of Grandparents, which was yesterday, and you know, the stress on the family, I think, is something that the Pope has always been very keen to emphasize. And the intergenerational family is something he's always put a lot of emphasis on, I think. And it's an important point that, you know, in society, we have been on a real glide path of further atomization, that the extended family, even the nuclear family now, is something that's become a bit of a fallen out of favor, both sort of culturally and institutionally. And I think reclaiming that sense that it's our family that is our first teacher, it is our family, it is the first vehicle for transmitting the faith, it is our family where we first encounter, hopefully, the love of God. But that is something that is of incredible importance.
Ed Condon, our guest here on the Drew Mariani Show. Ed is the co-founder of The Pillar. They are online at pillarcatholic.com. We're talking about the Holy Father's pilgrimage to Canada, something that will go on all through the week. You can join our conversation at 888-914-9149 as we talk about healing and reconciliation. 888-914-9149 as we continue here on the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Relevant Radio runs on horsepower, your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
From our grandparents, we learned that love is never forced. It never deprives others of their interior freedom. That is the way Joachim and Anne loved Mary and Jesus. And that is how Mary loved Jesus, with a love that never smothered him or held him back, but accompanied him in embracing the mission for which he had come into the world.
That is an excerpt of Pope Francis's homily about 2 hours ago at Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, celebrating the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass for some 65,000 pilgrims. It's part of the Pope's week-long tour of penance in Canada. It's called that tour of penance as the Holy Father gives an historic apology for the residential school abuses that happened in Indigenous residential schools in Canada, Indigenous young people in residential schools across Canada that were run by Roman Catholic women and men. Our conversation this afternoon with Ed Condon, the co-founder of The Pillar, online at the pillar at pillarcatholic.com. That's pillarcatholic.com. Unpacking the message and the power of the Holy Father's visit this week. The apology yesterday, if you missed it, let me just play an excerpt of that from the Holy Father.
Although Christian charity was not absent, and there were many outstanding instances of devotion and care for children, the overall effects of the policies linked to the residential schools were catastrophic. In the face of this deplorable evil, the Church kneels before God and implores his forgiveness for the sins of her children. I myself wish to reaffirm this with shame and unambiguously. I humbly beg forgiveness for the evil committed by so many Christians against the indigenous peoples.
Although Christian charity was not absent, and there were many outstanding instances of devotion and care for children, the overall effects of the policies linked to the residential schools were catastrophic. What our Christian faith tells us is that this was a disastrous error, incompatible with the gospel of Jesus Christ. In the face of this deplorable evil, the Church kneels before God and implores his forgiveness for the sins of her children. I myself wish to reaffirm this with shame and unambiguously. I humbly beg forgiveness for the evil committed by so many Christians against the indigenous peoples.
Many of those abusers in the group that met the Holy Father when he arrived in Canada yesterday, our conversation with Ed Condon and the co-founder of The Pillar. There's a deeper appreciation that I think we should have here in the United States, or at least in each individual, each one of us should have, because this apology, Ed, isn't it? It's a deeper process of reconciliation for all of us, whatever the wrong is. And of course, it's a major wrong when we talk about the abuse that's happening in Canada. But whoever has wronged us, it really is always a deeper process of reconciliation to get to that new day of repentance to one another.
Well, that's right. I think one of the things that's been very clear in the Pope's tone and in his words during this visit is he's not there just to say sorry, that he's looking for a genuine experience of reconciliation, of repentance. But the important fruit of that, the authentic fruit of real reconciliation, is that it ends in communion. It doesn't end in people going their separate ways and saying, fine, we're done with one another, all debts are satisfied. That it gives rise to a new understanding and a new fraternity, a new communion. And I think that is something which, you know, has been very encouraging to see, as you see not just members of the First Nations and Indigenous communities in Canada turning out for the Pope's visit, but also Catholics of these communities and peoples turning out and affirming that they are joyfully members of the Church. That this isn't a question of the Catholic Church is one thing over there and it did this to, you know, this people. To say that there is a common family here, that the Church wasn't necessarily just committing or participating in an offense against this people, but in many respects was committing an offense against its own people in this, that it's an interfamilial wound that needs to be healed as much as anything else. And I think seeing a new union and a new communion coming out of this papal visit is a great show of the power of reconciliation in the Church.
As we talk about the abuse crisis here in the United States and what happened in Canada, they're the same, but they are different. And one thing that struck me is how the victims of abuse not only were very public in sharing their stories, but also in the last 24 hours, especially this morning, for those who were either at the church last night or at one of the events with the Holy Father who heard that apology, is that they were very public about their stories and very public about accepting that apology. And here in the United States, with abuse victims, that was always undercover, that was quiet. Some did come forward, but not all did. What's the difference between the two groups?
Well, I think there are a lot of differences, but perhaps the most obvious one in this case is what we're talking about with the residential school system in Canada, is it was an institutional abuse. That the abuse crisis in the United States was very much a question of bad choices made by individuals, horrific abuse perpetrated by individuals that then individual leaders and bishops helped to elide or cover up or turn away from or to silence victims. But there was never any question of the policy of the church was in favor of some sort of institutional pattern of abuse. But in the residential schools, that's fundamentally what it was, that the real violence, the real terror of the residential school system wasn't individual bad actors doing terrible things to individuals. And indeed, that's not even fair to say, I think, the template of the entire residential school system. There have been many in the First Nations communities who've come forward and said, well, I had a broadly positive experience of many people that I met through the school system, that there were people there. And you heard this reflected in the Pope's words just previously. There were people who tried to do their work in the schools with a real sincere desire to serve. But the difference was the residential school system in Canada was flawed in its roots. It wasn't a good system gone bad. It was a bad system that did exactly what it was set up to do, which was to abuse the very culture and identity of an entire people and to separate children from their families. And there's no way to turn a system on that premise towards a good thing. And there's no way to hide it either. A national policy, passed by the government into law, isn't something that you can look away from. You can't hide the suffering of an entire people forever.
It's interesting. I'm just looking at some folks who are listening to our conversation, and they're saying that you and I are too soft on this. We should really be persecuting the American Catholic Church a little bit more.
Well, I don't know about persecuting the American Catholic Church a little more. I happen to be of the opinion that the persecution of the church in America is best understood as the suffering of survivors of abuse, but that is the church in America that has been persecuted. The hierarchy in the church in this country, I think it's important to draw a distinction between what was done in the 70s and early 80s, what was done in the decades following, where there was still a failure to reckon with or acknowledge or meet with survivors, and what has happened in the slow and halting and very painful and at times it's felt almost with dragging feet and gritted teeth, the process of changing a culture in the United States. But there has been progress made in the last two decades, and I don't think we can look forward to a future in which we really can say that abuse is unthinkable at a personal and institutional level unless we're willing to mark the progress along the way.
And also, Ed, also one of the keys here, and it gets reiterated in the Holy Father's in what the Holy Father has done in the last 24 hours in Canada. It's about reconciliation, and we should not take our eye off that ball. When you look at the Holy Father's face, you can see the gravity of the situation. Again, going back to our conversation earlier, that parish priest that Francis is at heart. But you can also see the energy today among the 65,000 pilgrims, including many of those abuse survivors who accepted that and now are on the road to reconciliation. And you and I know when we walk out of the confessional that we too have that energy, that we too have that long road to true reconciliation, that Jesus has forgiven us for our sins. And that's a key takeaway from this.
I think that's exactly right. And we have to recognize sincerity in seeking reconciliation where it's to be found. Now, there have certainly been instances in the United States, by no means in the far distant past, but certainly recently with the Theodore McCarrick scandal, where we have seen parts of the church, parts of the hierarchy continue to want to turn away and not see what was in front of their face. But I think part of understanding the reality that we're in now in the church in this country is understanding that there are counterexamples. I was talking to some leaders of survivors advocacy groups a few weeks ago about a settlement program and a reconciliation program being launched in the Diocese of Albany. And they had nothing but positive words to say about Bishop Scharfenberger there. Right. And the thing that they kept saying over and over again was, this is a man who met with me and who heard me and listened to me.
Yeah.
And that made a great difference. And so I think it's important for us to recognize that we are on the road to change in the church in the United States.
A very key point. And Ed, thank you for your perspective. Ed Condon, the co-founder of The Pillar. Find them online at pillarcatholic.com. That's pillarcatholic.com. Ed, thanks and God bless.
Thanks very much for having me.
The Hour of Power, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, coming up next here on The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.